Billionaires are buying these inflationary hedges for $33 million, $46 million, and even $110 million. And unless you're a member of the Rockefellers, there's no way you can afford to invest in them. That is, until the regulatory landscape changed in 2012. And suddenly, this value-preserving asset class was unlocked to everyday investors. Learn more at masterworks.io and use promo code WSJ to skip the waitlist. That's masterworks.io, promo code WSJ to skip the waitlist. See important Regulation A disclosures at masterworks.io/CD.
This is your tech news briefing for Monday, May 16th. I'm Zoe Thomas for The Wall Street Journal. Remote work has allowed some companies in the tech industry to find skilled staff, not just outside their city, but anywhere in the world. And it's allowed new tech hubs to crop up in places outside Silicon Valley and New York. But the industry is also warning that flexibility may come with a cost. On today's show, what one big industry lobby group says about the downsides of remote work and why they're looking to immigration as a solution. And we'll talk to WSJ reporter Julie Bykowitz about whether lawmakers will be more responsive to their arguments than in years past. That's after these headlines. Elon Musk says his $44 billion deal to buy Twitter is temporarily on hold. In a tweet on Friday morning, the CEO of Tesla said he wanted to confirm that fake accounts made up less than 5% of Twitter's user base, something Twitter has said in all its earnings reports. Our Heard on the Street columnist Dan Gallagher says Musk's focus on spam bots may be about something else.
You could debate about, you know, is less than 5% understating, overstating, like there's a fair amount of debate about that. What that does is, you know, Twitter stock has been well below where the offer price has been, and the market has been pricing in a significant risk of whether this deal actually gets done or if he does it at the price that he agreed upon. So what this looks like is maybe this is a pretext to either renegotiate the deal price or possibly walk away.
Musk tweeted later on Friday that he was still committed to the acquisition. Sources say lawyers urged Musk to send that tweet. One of the biggest names in cryptocurrencies has bought a piece of the trading platform Robinhood. Sam Bankman-Fried, who founded the crypto exchange FTX, disclosed a 7.6% stake in Robinhood last week, making him the company's third biggest shareholder. He disclosed the holding in a regulatory filing known as a 13D form. That form is used to indicate investors plan to take an active role in the company, perhaps seeking a board seat or pushing for a sale. Bankman-Fried said he had no plans to do those things right now, but he didn't rule them out. And NASA may be building rockets to go to the moon for the very last time. The space agency's moon rocket program, called the Space Launch System, or SLS, will be used to return astronauts to the lunar surface in 2025. But the program is both expensive and has faced delays. Our space reporter Micah Maidenberg has spoken with some former NASA and industry officials who say after that, the agency may look more to the private sector for their rocket needs.
Some former folks at the agency that I talked to say, like, this could be the last time that NASA builds its own powerful rockets and kind of operates them. Because, you know, in the future, the idea is that private companies will have, you know, be able to simply offer that service up. Now, others say, look, there's nobody else available that is a proven alternative to the SLS program yet.
All right, coming up, the U.S. tech industry has long pushed for letting more foreign workers in. How will its argument resonate in the era of remote work? We'll discuss after the break.
Analyzing news events involves many moving pieces. But whether you're analyzing politics or data points, accountability is key for doing great work. Monday.com keeps the entire organization on the same page in real time. Everyone knows who's responsible for what, when things are due, and how much progress has been made, so you know who to turn to in a moment of crisis or celebration. Leave your limits behind and discover what you can accomplish with Monday.com. To start your free 14-day trial, go to Monday.com/podcast.
Since the start of the pandemic, listings for remote work have become a common feature of the labor landscape. And some industries have embraced remote jobs. Take tech, for instance. According to a report from the trade group Technology Councils of North America, or TECNA, the number of remote jobs in tech increased by over 420% between January 2020 and April of this year. And while remote work offers flexibility, it also means foreign skilled workers may not relocate to the U.S. The industry says there's a way to fix this. Increase the number of visas for highly skilled workers, known as H-1Bs. This isn't a new desire for the tech industry. It's long pushed for more H-1B visas. But it's taking a new tack now that remote work has become ubiquitous. In a minute, we'll hear from our reporter Julie Bykowitz about how lawmakers are approaching this issue. But first, we have with us TECNA CEO Jennifer Young to discuss how the industry came into this position and why it's reframing the discussion around immigration policy. Hi, Jennifer. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Zoe.
So your organization represents regional trade groups. How are tech companies around the country feeling about the boost in remote work and particularly, you know, the outsourcing of jobs to locations outside of the U.S.?
Well, Zoe, we have nearly 60 trade organizations, technology trade-focused organizations in North America, and represent nearly 22,000 small to medium-sized tech companies. So we're looking at the innovation community. And in this community is a humongous chunk of the highly skilled workers, the software engineers, the coders, the developers. And these particular roles are very difficult already for these employers to be getting to come to work. To find them, we have completely exhausted the market in the United States. And so we are experiencing humongous growth in the technology industry in the United States. Every company is a tech company. And I say the United States, in North America. Every company is a tech company. So your financial institutions, your Walmarts, your anything that uses any kind of technology employs tech workers. It's not just big tech. And now the focus on a lot of these postings for new jobs being remote has really escalated the difficulty in attracting workers because they're limiting the ones that they can actually get into the office to help, you know, brainstorm, design, collaborate. It's become a really increasingly difficult situation for employers.
And so how are you suggesting that lawmakers and, you know, the U.S. at large should be responding to this?
Well, one of the ways that we're hoping that lawmakers look to remedy this issue is to start thinking about highly skilled immigration reform more of a workforce issue instead of an immigration issue. People who are coming into this country, you know, under a highly skilled visa are not coming here illegally. They're coming here legally and they're paying a lot of money to come, tens of thousands of dollars. And so they're coming through the full immigration process. But these people are not the ones that we need to be concerned about. We need to be very concerned that we don't have them. And so, you know, reforming our highly skilled immigration policies, making it more expeditious. Canada has done it really, really well. And they're kicking our tails. They are recruiting people hand over fist in terms of the tech workforce.
And we're talking about this from, you know, a visa perspective, from a company perspective. Do workers want to move to the U.S.? I mean, are you seeing demand from individuals saying they'd move if only they could get a visa?
Yes, we are seeing demand. Definitely companies are interested in doing it. And there is a huge misnomer amongst a lot of folks in the United States where they do truly believe that a lot of these particular tech workers are coming to the United States because they're being paid less than American workers. And there is a lot of misunderstanding around that. And yes, there have been bad actors in the past who have done this, but the majority of companies are not looking to recruit thousands of H-1Bs. They're looking for a dozen or five. And so they're not looking to take away any kind of American jobs. They would prefer to not have to do that. They would love to hire Americans. It's significantly cheaper to actually hire an American because the legal costs are not there. The visa costs are not there. But they have no choice because they're having difficulty getting Americans to do the same jobs. And people definitely do want to come to the United States. They're very eager to come to this country as evidence of just the number of applications that exist every year.
You know, there was this grab for software engineers during the pandemic. Everybody kind of realized like, oh, shoot, we're a tech company, too. What has that demand for software engineers been like over, you know, the last 2 years versus before? And how does that translate into demand for H-1B visas?
The software engineer in a company, they are the yeast to the bread. A software engineer is the one who creates the actual product, the tech product. The other positions are all positions very, very important to that product making, but the software engineer is the one that's the architect. And so without that person, the other tech jobs don't happen. And yes, there's absolutely been pre-pandemic and then throughout the pandemic an increasing need for software engineers.
Are you saying that because we have a shortage of skilled software engineers, that that could impact, you know, job creation or company creation around the country?
Absolutely. This definitely stymies growth, for sure, economically. And companies can't grow. If they can't grow their products, they can't grow. And there will be, you know, a lack of being able to hire the entire, you know, rainbow of all the positions that are needed in a company.
All right. That's Jennifer Young, CEO of Tekna. Thanks so much for joining us, Jennifer.
Thank you so much for having me this morning.
All right. That's how the industry sees things. But how is that message being received in Washington? Joining us to discuss that is WSJ reporter Julie Bykowitz. Hi, Julie. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Now, we just heard from Jennifer Young, the CEO of Tekna. That's, you know, how the tech lobby is feeling. But why have these efforts failed in the past?
That's a great question. I started covering these issues more than 10 years ago, and I remember there was a lot of optimism back then that sort of business-minded Republicans and business-minded Democrats, which there were a lot more of back in those days, could come together and really dig in on the H-1B program. There were lots of live efforts at the time. Nothing really materialized, but the talk from lawmakers was that they wanted to see something happen. Now, over the years, politics have shifted. And especially after President Trump's 4 years, you see many, many more Republican lawmakers viewing this as strictly an immigration issue, really pushing an America First approach to things, which includes, you know, urging tech companies to train better here in the U.S. and really stop looking overseas for new talent. You know, meanwhile, Democrats also have gotten wrapped up in efforts to not only address the H-1B program, but make that part of a broader immigration reform effort. So even when there is an H-1B bill that sort of starts advancing on the Hill, one or both of the sides will take issue with it for their different reasons. And therefore, we're kind of at a stalemate. We don't really see much movement on the issue, even though there's a very powerful lobby effort to try to make people pay attention to it.
And so I guess, you know, realistically, do we expect lawmakers to act on this? Or I guess, do we expect them to act on it anytime soon?
I think it's safe to say that there won't be a lot of action this year. We've got very sort of contentious and hard-fought midterms coming up in just a couple of months. And so whenever there's a looming election, which it seems like there always is a looming election, there's not a whole lot of movement on controversial issues. Once a new Congress is seated, I'm sure that the lobbying campaign will pick right back up, seeing that they have a new set of people to work with and a couple more years ahead of them to get something done. But what people are hoping for now is just some tweaks to the program. The Biden administration is taking a look at ways to make the H-1B program work better, cut down on some of the paperwork and the bureaucracy that companies and workers complain about, smooth things out on that end. And then there are a handful of lawmakers who would love to see some sort of consensus, even if it's just simple things like perhaps lifting the per country cap that resides within the H-1B program. So there could be some small movements like that. And then maybe after midterms and sort of people settle into their new roles, we'll see a more concerted push.
All right. That was our reporter, Julie Bykowitz. Thanks so much for joining us, Julie.
Thank you.
And that's it for today's Tech News Briefing. If you want more tech stories, check out our website, WSJ.com. And if you like our show, please rate and review it. You can do that wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Zoe Thomas for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.
I asked what kind of family she wanted. She said, a family like yours.
Learn more about adopting a teen at AdoptUSKids.org. You can't imagine the reward. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.